Every month we get to meet people whose individual stories are intertwined with the story of our region. Stories of Southern Oregon are compiled by Maureen Flanagan Battistella for the Southern Oregon Digital Archive, also known as SODA. That's at the Hannon Library here at Southern Oregon University. This month, Maureen is back with Thalia Truesdell, who moved to Sawyers Bar, California back in the 1970s and now makes her home in the Applegate Valley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Thalia.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us this morning here on the Jefferson Exchange. So you moved to Sawyers Bar, which is a pretty small town in western Siskiyou County, back in the 1970s. Why the move and why Sawyers Bar?
Well, my husband and I were living in Texas sort of by default, and we had a friend who had a mining claim there, and we asked if we could caretake it because we wanted desperately to leave Texas after our short little journey there. And so she had a little cabin. It was 10 by 12 on a cliff, and she told us that we could live there as long as we remembered it was her cabin, not ours.
So did a lot of people at that time maybe exploit is the wrong word, but exploit the Mining Act to move to the mountains and find places to live?
Yes, we weren't really aware of that. We were actually squatting, and we had never heard that word before on a mining claim, but we were living on a mining claim, and we did mine. We had our friend had a dredge, and we did find a little gold, but there was an 1872 mining law that said that in order to have a valid claim, you had to have, a prudent man had to make a living. So the ranger who made 20-something thousand dollars a year considered himself prudent, and everybody under that imprudent. And so, you know, we were making a couple hundred dollars a month and feeling pretty good about it, and that wasn't adequate. So we had a mineral exam so we could get kicked off of our mining claim and it wouldn't be proved valid.
You were challenged.
Yes.
Your right to live there was challenged.
Yes. And underhandedly, I might add, he sort of crept up on us and didn't have his badge on saying who he was and how are you all doing and, gee, welcome to the country. Are you planning to live here? And we were. And we also had added a room onto our little cabin, so then it was 2 10-by-12 rooms. And so people came from all over the county to our mining exam to challenge them, and did. And it turned out that the woman who owned the mine had gone into Wairika a couple days before and refiled her claim under another name, which then invalidated the Forest Service's mineral exam because it was the wrong claim, wrong name.
So there are always ways around these rules, I guess.
Well, there were until the Forest Service started burning down cabins so that nobody could live on any of the claims. They're all gone. There's nothing. There's nowhere to live there unless you buy property now.
I still, when I'm out on a dirt road in the mountains in Southern Oregon and Northern California, I still see, you know, a paper plate maybe tacked to a tree somewhere that's proof of someone's mining claim. Because that's still happening, I think.
People are mining, definitely. I know people who have made their living for several years. I mean, for their whole lives, actually, mining on the Salmon River. Sometimes there are big operations with a lot of equipment that breaks down regularly, and oftentimes it's just a dredge in the river. There's a lot of gold there.
So, Thalia Truesdell, describe the community you found in Sawyers Bar when you moved there back in the 70s.
Well, it was 1973, and just the back-to-the-land movement had just begun. Black Bear Commune was up on the mountain. It was a little further away. We weren't very connected with them, but we knew they were there. They were the real hippies. But there were some hippies living on the river, very few, and we became friends with them. And then there were some miners, and then there were the local people who were a little resistant to people coming in. But I started working at school, which made me normal, which helped with coming into the community. I socialized with the Forest Service families, and that also helped with my normalcy. I wasn't looked on as a weirdo freak or anything. So,
but you did look like a hippie at the time.
I did look like a hippie, yes.
You did have that tie-dye and those long skirts and bare
shoes. Actually, I had a man stop, an older hermit man stop one time, and he stopped, and I was out getting my mail, and he pulled over and said, "What are you doing?" He averted his eyes first. "What are you doing out here in your nightgown?" And I said, "This isn't my nightgown. It's a dress. It's a nightgown." I said, "No, it's a dress. It's like the fashion of the times." And he couldn't look at me. He was so embarrassed. It was quite funny.
But there were those divisions in the community, though, between the people who had been there for generations and the newcomers, the hippies.
Yes.
How did you get around those? How did you build a community with those divisions there?
Well, like it's sort of easy for me because of being in the school and associating with the Forest Service people as well. That made that part easy. And then within a couple of years, we were the majority. The hippies were the majority. And the local people just sort of went along with the program. But we were movers and shakers, too. We rebuilt the town hall and had a lot of community gatherings to which everybody came, hosted dances to which everybody came, and it just became more and more community. It didn't matter after a while.
You built the school, didn't you? You have photos of building a structure.
The town hall.
That was the town hall.
The school was built in the late 60s because of earthquake violations. They had to build a new school.
Got it.
And so we just traded land with the county. They had a county. They didn't have a barn, I don't think, but they had an area. And they just traded with where the school was, and then their school became their county barn.
It's Stories of Southern Oregon here on the Jefferson Exchange with Maureen Battistella, and she's brought with her Thalia Truesdell, who moved to Sawyers Bar, California, back in the 1970s. Maybe you have some memories to share of those days in Southern Oregon and Northern California. You can join the conversation this morning by calling us at 800-838-3760. You can also email us, jx@jeffnet.org. If I'm not mistaken, if I remember correctly, it's been a few years since I've been to Sawyers Bar. There's a beautiful old church there. Was that part of the community? Was that an important part of the community then?
It wasn't used. For a while, they came over once. The priest from Fort Jones came over once a month for services, but only one family and one other older gentleman attended. And then the other family moved away, and so it was just the one man, so they stopped coming. But we did have services there, non-denominational services. We had an Easter service there one year, and the school teacher and his wife hauled the organ and 75 extension cords or whatever to get up to the church. The church is on a pedestal right now. It used to be on the flat land, and over the years it was all mined all around it. And now I don't know how high the pedestal is, but 50 feet at least up in it's just way up in the air. And it is almost literally a pedestal. And all the other ground, the road and everything is down below. It was all mined away. A lot of kids have tried tunneling into under the church because there's estimated to be in the 1970s or 80s, it was estimated to be $50,000 worth of gold under the church, and it's still there. But we did have the Easter service, and then everyone decided they wanted to have church services for a month. So then the diocese in Fort Jones decided that wasn't okay. There might be vandalism or something, so they took it. They shut it down, and then they also took the painting which Father Florian had brought from Austria in 1855, he brought it on his back to the church. Huge painting of Jesus on the cross, and the Fort Jones diocese took that to Fort Jones because of vandalism. And there has never been a single bit of vandalism in Sawyers Bar, to my knowledge, ever.
And is that painting still in Fort Jones?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So you could go see it at the church there. So from Sawyers Bar, you moved to the Applegate. When was that, and why did you make that move?
Well, we had to move for high school. Our choice was to board our kids out, which really no one does anymore, but they had done for a century. So we didn't really want to do that, and we didn't really care to live in the Scott Valley, which was right next to Sawyers Bar. So in Fort Jones or Etna, we didn't want to do that. So I inherited some money, and we bought a house in Ashland, and we moved up to Ashland. We were here for a year, and I just couldn't stand living in a big city, so so we found a place in the Applegate.
And can you characterize the community of the Applegate compared to Sawyers Bar? Were there differences there?
Hugely different.
Was it a big culture shock?
It still is a culture shock sometimes when I'm expecting that I have something I need to do and there's nobody there to help me. And just we just knew this in Sawyer's Bar. There were no telephones. There was no communication. You just always were helping somebody else. So when I moved to the Applegate, I started a women's group, Women Helping Other Women, so that we could get people helping each other. And that's thriving, I'm happy to say. We just, you know, we just go to each other's houses and we have like a debit and credit situation so we can keep track. It's not quite as spontaneous and loving as it was in Sawyer's Bar. But yes, the community was just beginning to form, sort of. It was a very large church community out there, and then there were the locals, and then there were the other people that were just flailing about with nowhere to go. And so once we had a library, actually, it really began to gel as a community, I think. And then the Applegate Partnership started, which is huge, and that really pulled things together, too. And now there are many, many organizations out there, where when I was first moved there in 87, I guess, there was next to nothing, or 88.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so in 1987, you encountered kind of cultural divisions, maybe, and also kind of a sense of individualism. Is that what I'm hearing? That maybe
I didn't encounter
Sawyer's Bar?
I didn't encounter anything because there was no sense of community that I could find in the Applegate. There was the Grange for the farmers and the church, and that's really about all.
Mm-hmm.
But in Sawyer's Bar, you were thrown in with these people. And, you know, like my son had a friend who was 2 hours younger than he was, and they had to be best friends. There was no choice.
Here, meet your best friend.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Was the area larger in the Applegate? Was that one reason why? The river in Sawyer's Bar sort of kept everyone in one location, that one road.
On one road, or two roads.
Yeah.
Not really in one location, but on two roads. But it was just a sense that you all needed each other in Sawyer's Bar very much. You needed each other because it was tough living. You know, there was no electricity. Most people didn't have running water, at least for a while, and no telephones, no nothing. You really relied on each other. And out in the Applegate, it was just very spread out, and a lot of people commuted into Medford, and that you just lose a sense of community when that happens, I think.
So. That was one thing I was going to ask, because the Applegate is very, very close to Medford, which is a really large community. I mean, I guess we can call it a city now. And Sawyer's Bar is really out there. There's not much nearby.
So when we lived there, there were at most 100 people who identified with the town, and that was probably a 15-mile long run along the Salmon River Road, and then 4 or 5 miles up a couple of different gulches. Very, very spread out. Most people could, you know, shoot a gun and somebody couldn't even hear them from their house. So they were very spread out. But, in the Applegate, it's also spread out, but there's just no sense of need, I think.
Then.
But that's changed
now.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a sense of need in the Applegate to have community. I think that people do have community, and I know they love it, but it's you can just go into Medford to get what you want. You don't have to go to each other.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the library in the Applegate earlier. That's the library at Rouche, is that
yes.
correct? And you're heavily involved there. Tell us about that.
I'm the branch manager at the Rouche Library. I kind of wish I'd known about this 20 years ago. I would have jumped right into it, but I feel like it's sort of the hub in the Applegate. It's one place that's always there. We're only open 3 days a week at this point, but it is a hub that we have a large community room that's twice as big as we were allotted. We raised money to double the size of it, and it's a very, very active community room, and it helps bring people together.
And the wine industry is exploding in the Applegate Valley. How has that changed things since you've been living there, or has it changed at all?
It has. I would say that traffic has doubled since 1987. That sounds ridiculously like a large increase, but I really do feel that way. And I think a lot of it, tourism is great. I know I was just reading yesterday that the smoke has really cut the tourism in the valley, plus it's threatening the grapes as well. But I think it's great that there's an industry out there that's drawing people in. besides just pot.
Are there things about the Applegate that you would like to see change that would help build community, or things that are missing there for you?
I think that it's a process that's happening right now, and I know that the Ford Family Foundation and the Rural Development, I'm not sure if it's initiative, I think it is, groups are getting together and helping to form community. They've just recently come up with a roadmap of the Applegate on where are we coming from, where are we going, how are we going to do it. I think there's a lot of attention being directed that way to help create and balance the community.
One of the things, I want to get back to talking about the hippies, because one of the things that's really struck me over the last couple of years is how many people I meet in Southern Oregon, all over the region, and Northern California, who came here back in the day. They're people my age and older who were hippies back in the day. They came here for the communes. The communes, some of them still exist. We had some people on this segment on the exchange talking about existing communes. But a lot of these people are now, if I can use the word, they become the establishment. And I think it's really interesting how the culture of the region was changed by this huge influx of, in many cases, urban, young urban people. Do you see that?
I guess I would challenge the idea of those individuals or people coming from that movement as being establishment. I think that what we see in those people is a commitment to community, a commitment to each other, a commitment to the earth. I think those same ideals and that those same values have grown and changed and matured. And I think those are the influences we're seeing now, particularly here in Ashland, which I think was a haven for many people. In the 70s, talked to a number of people who said that the only place they could get organic food, for example, or Whole Foods was here in Ashland at the Lithia Grocery. And it became a place of refuge for those who were seeking others like themselves in a more urban environment.
One of the outcomes of the roadmap for the Applegate that was just recently, I think it was last fall that this began to happen, and I wasn't able to attend all the meetings because I was working, but I got a very strong feeling that the land was the most important thing to everybody, and respect for it and care of it was the, you know, stewardship was just utmost importance to everybody. There are a lot of farmers in the Applegate, not growers, but farmers who have an amazing number of them that are growing, and a lot of them are growing seed. They grow, you know, just vegetables for seed. They get the pulp, the company gets the seed.
It's a new generation.
It is a new generation, and it's thriving in the Applegate. It really is. I think that's fantastic, mm-hmm. And it's all about the land.
Well, Thalia Truesdell, who is now in the Applegate, was in Sawyer's Bar, and Maureen Battistella, thanks for a really fascinating segment of Stories from Southern Oregon. Thanks very much.